The gentleman from Malkier requests the floor.
Hey everyone, welcome to Barside Chats. I'm Brian the Gleeman.
And I'm Matt the Innkeeper.
And this is a Wheel of Time podcast from the Dusty Wheel. This episode contains spoilers up to the very last book. If you have not finished this series, maybe skip this one. Otherwise, enjoy. It's a lovely day here at the Barside. I'm Brian the Gleeman, and I'm joined, as usual, by my friend and co-host, Matt the Innkeeper. And our guest today is another Matt and a fan from Twitter that goes by the handle Malkier's King. Matt, Malkier's King, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Okay, guys, we have a very important question that had been weighing on my mind for years, and I just can't hold it in anymore. I need your help to solve this question. Why? Why would anyone be a warder? Malkier's King, you want to kick us off here? Why would anybody want to do this? It's a lot of work, you know?
Is it really?
Thank you for listening to Barside Chats. We'll see
you. It's over. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty short.
Okay, so that's a good point. So he just brought this up. I think let's tackle this. Is being a warder a lot of work? And I think you can say no, but only in the instance where you happen to be bonded to an Aes Sedai that doesn't require much work from you. You know, for example, let's say your Aes Sedai just loves hanging around the library, loves chatting with other Aes Sedai, and loves maybe watching you train. I don't know, whatever it is. So maybe you never leave the White Tower. You just get up, you hang out, and there's nothing going on. So for you, maybe individually, it's not a lot of work. But I think the opposite side of that, we can say it's probably a ton of work for some warders, is all I'm saying.
Okay, so I will actually answer my own question and say that I kind of disagree with you on there, only in that even for the people whose Aes Sedai are in the tower all the time, it's still a lot of work. What goes into being a warder is not as much the stuff that you do with your Aes Sedai, but is the training. That's a huge part of the work that goes into it.
I mean, that's what I was talking about. Like, training sounds like a lot of work.
But the reason why I said to you, the reason why I asked that question in the first place was because I think you're trying to look at it in a vacuum, and I don't know that works. You know, what are the options, right? You could be a farmer. You could be a shepherd, or depending on where you're from, you could be a sheep herder. I don't know what the difference is, but apparently, some people have different terminologies.
It depends on where you're from. There's different traditions in Malkier than there are in Two Rivers. So
in Malkier, we call them sheep herders, and apparently they have four horns. So
you could be an Aes Sedai's cannon fodder. You know. There's lots of things you could choose.
but at the same time, you got to remember, back in those days in Renland, your choices of vocation were fairly limited, right? And pretty much anything you did was hard work. Like, there's very little that was really just sitting around all day doing nothing, right? Some is harder than others, but you could ask the same question, why would anybody be a soldier? There are a lot more soldiers than there are warders.
That's a great question. But I think the difference is people generally don't become soldiers as a first choice, right? Unless you are somebody who just really believes that fighting a war for honorable reasons is a good thing, usually you don't want to go to battle. You don't want to go to war. You get drafted. You get pulled into it. You need to get out of your hometown, and there's no other way to get out. So becoming a soldier is often an option of last resort, whereas a warder is a more prestigious thing to be, right? You don't kind of like, oh, I'm homeless on the streets. I'm an urchin on the streets. And the only way that I can get out of this is to become a warder. Like, that's not true. So to the other ones, like sheep herder or a bartender or a baker or something like that, those are also a lot of work. But there's, what is it about being a warder that makes you want to be a warder rather than some of those other things? And, you know, yeah, it seems like a lot of work to be a warder, but why would you want to specifically be some bonded to somebody, not just, you know, like legally or whatever, but in a very real magical sense, where if they lose their life, you go not so. That's a huge thing to take on. So why would you want to do that as opposed to be a soldier where you don't have to do that? Why would you want to be a warder?
I like that. Well, you just said prestige, and I think that's a good one. That's an interesting one, which is there probably are stories told, right, that make it sound prestigious for some. Some probably grow up and like, you know, I mean, just as you see in the books, you have people that are like warders. Oh my God. You know, they've heard stories told of warders. And so there is prestige that goes along with it. I'm going to add a little something in here, which I think is also ignorance. I think ignorance is what would drive you also. And what I mean by that is you can't know what it's like to be bonded until you're bonded. And, you know, just like so many other things in life, they're not as bad, maybe seeming from the outside, as once you're inside of the thing that you're engaging with, whatever it is, you know, when it comes to, you know, even a job, any type of job you take on, you're like, I can do that. But then you get to the job and you're like, oh, this is a lot more involved than I ever imagined. I feel like being a warder, there's a lot of learning lessons you never likely expected, and no one could explain it enough for you to understand it.
When you're training to become a warder, you're getting a sense of, like, training is not just all swords, right? And Matt, you can correct me here, but the sword, as being a warder, is not just all about training with a sword. You're training on how to track people. You're training on how to go incognito. You're training on, you know, how to different customs for different places. It's like being a spy, right?
It's like you got to think that warder training is like the elite of the elite.
It's almost like Navy SEALs, and nobody knows what it's like to be a Navy SEAL until you're a Navy SEAL. But everybody has an idea of what a Navy SEAL does, and so you don't sign up to be a Navy SEAL being like, well, it's just another type of soldier. Like, nobody does that, right? You have some sense going into it, even if you can't truly know what it is until you are one.
Right. So you also have to bear in mind that there's a trade-off here. On the one hand, there are very strong benefits to the warder bond that most people don't really – people kind of know some of them through rumors and stories and usually things that are not quite accurate. Because even, like, you know, when you look at Gareth Bryn, he didn't really fully understand what the warder bond entailed. So if you remember, sometime towards the last battle, he was saying that if he could get all the men in his army bonded, he would, because there is such a massive benefit to soldiers to having the warder bond. It enhanced strength and endurance, enhanced healing, the ability to go without sleep for several days, like all these things that just make you give a person almost this superhuman edge when it comes to fighting, which is really extremely important when fighting is your life. But the trade-off is this emotional connection to your Aes Sedai, which, if it's snapped because the Aes Sedai is dead or manages to be flung through a portal to a different world and have that doorway burned out so that you can't feel them anymore. Not as common, but it still happens apparently. Then in those situations, then you go insane and become suicidal. But when people sign up for this sort of thing, they don't think that that's going to happen to them. I guarantee you, every single warder who signs up to be a warder does it with the full intention that they are going to die before their Aes Sedai does. It's just a thought. It's just what they do. When people...
So are you saying that it's like it's kind of an elite, like what you're looking at this as is individuals that in their mind are thinking they would like to be a soldier, but an elite soldier. You know, one that it's not just, I just want to be on the front lines doing something. It's, I want to actually be and I'm willing to give up maybe some I don't know, agency, if you will, or whatever you want to call it, for becoming more elite and having, you know, more advantages in the battlefield.
Well, I don't even think it's giving up agency, because when you're a soldier, what agency do you have? You go where you're told. You do what you're told. You know, you can earn rank and become a captain and a general, and then you get to say where people go. But most soldiers don't get there. But I think part of it, at least for some people, is this idea that they are being the best of the best of the best. And part of it is like Brian was saying, like some people who join the army, few people who join the army, do so out of idealistic reasons. Like a lot of people will join the army because it's a way to get out of their town, hometown, or it's three square meals a day and possibly a paycheck at the end of the week or the month or whatever it is. But at least they know that they get what's the saying? Three hots in a cot. You know, they get their meals.
Sounds like
right?
Rand.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's not expected. Yeah. No, but seriously, they get people join the army because they know they're gonna get food, they're gonna get paid, they're gonna get clothing. Like if you have nothing else, then that's a reason to join up the army, particularly back in those days. But there were some people who joined the army for ideological reasons, because they felt very patriotic. This is my duty. I want to fight for my king/queen. And I would like to think that most people who sign up to become warders do so for the same reason. Because they believe that assisting an Aes Sedai in their job is the best thing that they can do to serve the light. You know, not everyone's like that, obviously, especially not the Dark Friends, but you know.
So what would you say then? So I can see that, you know, you look at someone like Lan and probably others where it does feel like they're ideologically aligned. But what about someone like Elias? You know, is there a contingent of warders that weren't really joining for the ideological alignment of their goals to protect and be part of the mission of the White Tower, basically?
Sure. I mean, I think Elias is probably one of the ones who did it because he was an amazing fighter and he just wanted to take it to the next level.
So do you think all warders inherently, when it comes to why does anyone want to be a warder, do you think inherently all warders want to fight?
Do they want to fight?
Yeah. They want to go to battle in some form or fashion. I would say probably yes.
You know, nobody really wants to fight, but they believed it to be inevitable. So let's look at Lan, because I think he's actually very different from most warders. Why did he let Moraine bond him? Lan let Moraine bond him because she basically convinced him that it was better than giving everything up. His dreams had been shattered. Everything he had been doing, you know, his previous goal was to return to the borderlands and basically just die killing Shadowspawn in the Blight. But he was tied to Bukama, who was the last of the 20 elite soldiers who had taken him, carried him on their backs out of Malkier when Malkier fell. Bukama was killed by the Dark Friend, his friend from childhood, Ryan Venomar, I think. And Moraine caught up with Lan as Lan was headed towards the Blight, burning his past. And Moraine convinced him, essentially, by saying that you want to die fighting the Shadow. I think you're too valuable to die. And if you join me, you'll be fighting the Shadow in a far more effective way than you could ever do it by yourself. And she explained the whole thing about how she heard the foretelling and how they got the names, and they were doing this whole search, and about the Black Aja. She like laid everything on the table, completely opened up to him.
Why have I never thought about the Aes Sedai as military recruiters? I guess I never thought about it that way. But they do go out and recruit individuals like this. For example, Elias's background was as a soldier. And that's, and he ended up, he trained Lan. So there is a certain measure, which makes sense, right? Because an Aes Sedai needs someone often to defend them, especially among a populace that is really suspect of them, you know, considering their oaths. And I didn't think about that, you know, when you consider their oaths, and then you look at warders, maybe you could say that, why does anyone want to be a warder? Because of those oaths, they feel like they're inherently, they can have some trust there, and that they are actually vital to the mission. You know, they're more vital than just, I don't want to say this, like they like you said, they're more elite in that way and vital to the mission of the White Tower.
Right. They're not just a bodyguard. Right. They essentially become a partner.
I kind of want to challenge the idea that they're soldiers, because there are seven Ajas, eight Ajas, seven for practical purposes. The Blues are mission driven. They pick a mission. They're going to go figure it out. They're going to solve world hunger. They're going to defeat the Dark One, whatever their mission may be. And that may or may not include combat. But you've got Yellow Aja, for example. They're healers. Do they need bodyguards for? You're talking about like the brown Aja that spend most of their time in libraries doing research. The sitter of the hall, for example, she doesn't go out and do archaeological digs in, you know, Tyr or Carrion or something like that. She stays in the tower and she's all politics. What does she need a bodyguard for? Most of the warders that we actually meet are on the road, right? They're out in the world. They're traveling. They're doing things, especially Lan, especially Elias. But there are tons and tons and tons. Most of the Aes Sedai are actually in the White Tower, right? And they don't really leave. So if you're the warder for a brown Aja, for example, who is a bookworm and wants to be in the library and do research all the time, you're almost more like a librarian assistant that happens to have martial arts training, right? Like you are like. You may be like
I agree with that.
No, I don't.
I mean,
I don't
you don't have to be a Navy SEAL to be a warder.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that, and I'll tell you. I have a couple of reasons why I don't buy that. So number one, nobody knows the Aja of the Aes Sedai who's going to bond them when they go to start training. So they're training because they have no idea where they're going to go, what they're going to do, who they're going to come up against, and two, just because an Aes Sedai isn't going out into the Blight or into battle all the time doesn't mean they're not in constant danger. You got to remember, there are a lot of people out there, particularly White Cloaks, but other people as well, who let's say they harbor ill will towards Aes Sedai. You know, definitely you have to be concerned about White Cloaks. And, you know, in places where Aes Sedai are not held in high regard and they have to be in disguise, you know, a young appearing woman by herself often needs, especially in those times, heck, even in these times, needs somebody big and scary looking to help turn away people who might try to cut her purse and slit her throat, you know? And whether or not,
because there's also gray men, there's also Myrdral, right? There's also the forces of the Dark One that, you know, can attack in any place. There is that aspect of it too. But I like what you were saying about that idea that, you know, they don't necessarily know who they're going to.
Well, that's not true. Lan knew.
Well,
yeah, this is making the assumption.
But Galad, you know,
this is making the assumption that. The Aes Sedai only recruit from those that have trained at the tower, which is because of Lan, we know that's not true.
Right.
But at the same time, if she's recruiting, that means that she's not in the tower. That means that she's out there, right?
Being a soldier, being a bodyguard, you said this yourself, being a, it's not all they do. They're not just a bodyguard. They're not just protection. They're not just muscle for the Aes Sedai. They serve other functions. And depending on who their Aes Sedai is, that function may be not fighting ever, right? That may be, I'm going to be the one that does research for them, or I'm going to be, you know, chief of staff when I'm negotiating treaties.
Look, Jame, was it Van Dien? Was it Van Dien's warder?
I think so.
Jame, yeah. You know, they were on retreat, you know, for God knows how long, 10 years, 20 years, whatever. What was he doing? Training and taking care of their books for them. Like, you know, there was nothing else to do, but he was, his primary goal was their protection, even if they didn't really need it that much. And look at, Swan's warder, Ulrich. She's the Amerlin seat. What does she need protection from? Where does she go? She doesn't do that much. She's in the tower 95% of the time. But his job is still to protect her.
Yeah, I guess I don't know why I haven't thought about it this closely, but because I'm trying to attack the idea that it really is about someone that ideologically aligns with the missions of the White Tower, and as a portion of that, or a significant portion of that mission, also does want to be an elite soldier. Because there is a whether or not they want or ever using those skills, they are responsible to keep those skills up. Now, did every warder in all time always do that? No.
I guess what I'm thinking is that it's actually kind of the other way around, where I want to be a warder, and part of the responsibility of being a warder is to be a soldier. And I might want to bond a brown Aja because I really like books and I want to do research too. And bonding a brown Aja, Aes Sedai, would be beneficial for that. But part of the job is being a soldier, being a bodyguard. And
did, like, Robert Jordan ever explore that? Did he ever explore that? I feel like that would have been a natural occurrence of those kind of relationships.
But if you look at a bunch of the Aes Sedai that we meet, their warders fit them very well. Right, like Varen's warders are very much like, they like to help her with her research, and same thing for Adelaus, who's the brown Aja, Vendi's sister. They're very much act like nerdy warders that could kill people like in the blink of an eye, right? You do the same thing with like some of the green Aja. The green Aja warders are like, they're soldiers, but they're also like, you know, sex freaks. So,
well, just makes sense because choosing a warder is a very personal matter.
Yeah.
So, an Aes Sedai chooses somebody who she feels is going to be a good fit for her.
Right. And so I guess what I'm wondering is, like, are there other reasons to become a warder than I want to be a big bad soldier, right? Like, I want to be a big sad soldier, and I want to have sex with a beautiful Aes Sedai all the time. Then I'm going to go green Aja.
I think it's a combination. So I think there probably are people, like I said, there are people who are doing it because they just want to be the elite. But at the same time, I would think that the majority of people who do it because they have this profound respect for Aes Sedai. You know, we're kind of given the impression, because of a lot of the point of views that we see in the books, that most people are distrustful of Aes Sedai. And there are many cultures where that is a prevalent feeling, that people tend to be, you know, in many parts of Andor and all over the South, people tend to be distrustful of Aes Sedai. But particularly in the North, in the Borderlands in particular, people have a great deal of respect for Aes Sedai. And even in the more elite levels of society, in the more noble levels of society, people tend to have more respect for Aes Sedai, even when they don't like them so much. So I think that a lot of the people who sign up, who go to the tower to train to be a warder, do so because they want to assist. They want to protect Aes Sedai. That's what they want to do with themselves.
But to go along with that, because I think the why else, because I think we have well established that is one of them, but I'm going to throw this out there. Anything that goes along with prestige, power has to be talked about. I can see a reason to be a warder would be access to power, right? You are just the Aes Sedai you're going to be with, first of all, the elite soldiers you're going to be around and the elite training you're going to get, access to potential like leaders of countries. You're going to hear things and be around those things. And if you look at the relationship that some warders have with their Aes Sedai, you're going to be part of those decisions. Your depending on who your Aes Sedai is, your opinions are well considered. And so these Aes Sedai are actually instructing in many cases, consulting with leaders of the world. So I can see people looking at becoming a warder as not just an elite soldier, sure, but there's an aspect of this where you actually get, you could have been some poor kid, whatever. And it is a way to rise up in station, at least from a power perspective, getting access to power than in other ways and other jobs, if you will, in life, you would never, ever get anywhere close. So I think that has to be in the list.
When you say the power perspective, it kind of makes me, it gives me this vision of this little kid who's been bullied all his life and goes and trains and becomes a warder. And as soon as he's bonded, he's like, all right, let's come back to my hometown. There's somebody I want you to like shoot a fireball at.
Yes.
Yeah, that is, those are the Black Azure warders.
No, but you know, you brought up a good point, which is not only power, but maybe I wonder if vengeance retribution is a reason why some seek out after becoming a warder. You know, some, you know, malign, whatever it is. Yeah, you've been bullied in life. Some, not just defending others, but you want to feel like you can defend yourself. Maybe that would bring some kind of...
I would define that more as like control rather than vengeance, of having, being able to control your own destiny in a way that you can't if you don't have that power.
Sure.
Vengeance to me implies, you know, evil or, you know, Black Asha tendencies, whereas I was bullied as a child and I want to have control to never be bullied again is a different thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to make a distinction here that we haven't done yet. Which is there are people who go train with the warders, but without the intention of being warders. Looking at the princes of Andor, for example. Yep,
exactly. I was about
On our next show. That's on our next show, which is why would anyone want to train with a warder and not become a warder?
Right. Sounds like a lot of work for nothing. That is my next question, actually, which is we talked a lot about people. So there are people who want to become warders for power, to be a soldier, to be for prestige reasons. What if you're already powerful? Like do sons, like the princes of Andor, for example, one of them became a warder. Why would somebody in Gawain's position, for example, want to become a warder? Like what is it? Is there something more prestigious about being a warder than being a prince of Andor? Or
for somebody like Gawain, I don't know that it would be a question of prestige. I don't know that he would do it because it's a prestigious thing. He has all the prestige in the world. Like there are a limited number, a very small number of people who are more prestigious than him in the world. Like he's almost as high up as you can get. Being a warder for him was a question of essentially doing what was right. That was the right thing to do. You know, for him, he was in love with Egwene. He wanted to marry her, but also because she's an Aes Sedai, he wanted to be her warder so that he could protect her. You can tell in his mind that was really the only goal, the only job of a warder was to protect, because he couldn't be a partner. He couldn't accept her as the Amyrlin seat and as the Aes Sedai and accept, do what she instructed him to do. He, in his mind, the only thing that he had to do was to protect her, and that superseded everything else. Like if he was a partner, he would have collaborated with her and talked to her and worked out plans and stuff, but he refused all that. All he wanted to do was protect.
I'll add a little bit into this, which I think is you could add familial expectations. You know, there could be something like, you know, your father was a warder.
Right. Like,
and you would need to become one or something like that. Or
like
someone,
the third
there,
son becomes a warder,
yeah,
or something.
But there
that
is
was
something
one
about
of
protecting
the,
your house. Protecting
that was something
your
in one of the role-playing
lineage,
stories,
you know,
that I wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Adding prestige to your royal lineage is a reason, you know, like there, in other words, saying not only was he the prince of the house, but he was also a warder for other, in other words, it still is a power connection, right? It ties your house, in this case, to the White Tower.
I'm not sure that I agree with that, because his expectation was to, the expectations of him were that he would train as a warder and then return to Andor to fulfill his duties as the first prince of Andor. His job was to return and lead Andor's armies.
Yeah, I'm not talking necessarily about him. I don't mean necessarily him as an individual. I mean from the broader perspective of why would anyone? I can see a random son of some kind of powerful family connecting themselves or wanting to connect themselves to the White Tower in order to
lord wanting their son.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yes. I can see that being a case. There is one thing we really haven't focused on, but we've talked about Lan about this same question, which is why would anyone, not necessarily power, prestige, or becoming an elite soldier, but to destroy? I mean, we talked about it in the sense of mission alignment, but I could see somebody, maybe their family was killed by dark friends or something, whatever. Maybe their best friend was killed by dark friends, and they see access here as a means by which they can go out. And again, maybe it's not retribution or vengeance of some sort. Maybe it's a holy war of whatever it is against the dark one. But I can see someone kind of growing up in a situation where they say, this is my path to bring about the end of this destructive force that's affected their life. And I think you see that generally in the real world. And I think that does transcend really well into the story with Lan.
It's a great narrative motive in books, and every story has somebody who wants to do something like that.
There's always that person, right?
So is that one guy.
That one guy.
It is a trope, but I never felt like I hated that trope in Lan, if that makes sense. And I don't know if that's just Jordan's skill, but is there something else we're missing about why anyone would want to be a warder? I mean, we've addressed a variety of motivations, but does anything come to either of you where you're like, there's this other motivation we haven't brought up yet?
Let me flip that around.
Okay.
So reasons to become a warder: you get a badass soldier, like you're like the Navy SEAL of soldiers. You get prestige, you get some power, you get food, 3 square meals a day. You get, you get money. You get, you're taken care of. If you're a Green Ajah, you get some special bedroom favors. Like, there's plenty of reasons to become
metahuman abilities. Don't forget that.
There you go. You get the inhuman abilities. You get, you're faster, stronger. You live longer. You're all of those things. So why wouldn't somebody want to be a warder? The obvious answer is if your Aes Sedai dies, you go nuts. But beyond that, like, why not? Why wouldn't you want to be a warder?
Maybe you're a White Cloak.
I know you said you don't lose agency, but I think you do. Part of Lan, you know, there's many times where Lan does want to go off and fight his personal war and he can't. He physically is not capable of doing so.
It was just in the context of comparison to being in the army. You don't lose your agency more than you do in the army. But you're right. You're right. You are beholden. And in fact, there is actually a level of compulsion associated with the bond that Moraine has never used on Lan, but some Aes Sedai do use the bond to compel their warders. We see Morel try that on Lan when he's suicidal after the bond transfers. We see that Ilana tried to use the compulsion on Rand when she bonded him. Yeah. That didn't work as she planned.
And there's that aspect of it. I think also you are, and I guess we can kind of tie it to the military in that way. You do your mission becomes very specific, and I guess, doing the same thing forever, right? Like, you're not that you can't be. I mean, there's records saying, you can obviously get out, right? Your Aes Sedai can allow, remove the bond. It's shunned. You should not do that. They don't want you to do that, but it's possible. So it's not like it's a one and done necessarily, but it is kind of like it's for 99.99% of the people, it is choosing a life and then you're stuck forever in that life. So I think that there is that aspect of, you know, why wouldn't you? Is this is a decision you really can't take back, you know, and I think that there's that aspect to it. And, you know, not being in, not actually being responsible for protecting someone else's life every moment of every day for the rest of your life could be a motivation of not choosing it. But I feel like there's way too many motivations of why you wouldn't want to be. But specific, I think we those are the main ones, at least to me, which is just that absence of other in the, for the rest of your life.
Right. This is a permanent choice for the most part. Although did anyone else find it somewhat of a minor plot hole that that Elias's Aes Sedai didn't just release the bond?
I was just thinking that.
Like when he left, she muted the bond so that they couldn't find each other. But why not just release him? Like, what's the point?
I was kind of curious about that, so I had to check on that. I guess I didn't know this, but the Wheel of Time companion suggests that it's possible they were married.
Interesting.
That's interesting.
So it's possible that this if you think about it in that context, I can see why. You know, they would want to maintain that connection in some form or fashion.
I did like in New Spring when Moraine was sent on an errand, she was going through, there's this tiny little throwaway scene where she's going through the Green Ajah section and Elias and Rina's other warder are sparring and she's cheering them on. It's like this just tiny little section, but it's this whole nod to this whole other set of relationships.
That's interesting. I was going to say, and you're right, it's a plot hole in that it's not addressed in the books, but there are some reasons to speculate that are pretty supported, I think, by the books, is that there are rules that the Aes Sedai follow that are not the law necessarily. And like the way that they defer to each other based on the strength and the power. And, you know, there's just things you just don't do. And maybe you just don't release the bond. Like it's just a thing you don't do. And Moraine, as we know, is not the best rule follower, right? Like she's a little bit of a maverick compared to the other Aes Sedai that we meet. So I think it's potentially an explanation for that would be that Moraine just broke the rules.
Well, she certainly did. I mean, people considered it. People who knew about it considered it almost akin to rape, even though it was done for his best interest.
Yeah, that question itself deserves its own podcast episode.
Potentially,
you know, like examining the nature of the bond, and because I know a lot of fans have talked about this over the years of just how ethical some of this is. You know, although the bond that they discover or that they start using at the end of the series, where they are actually, you actually find Chandler's bonding spouses in a different kind of, I can't remember if it's more of an equal, and there's more equality to that bond, if you will. At least that's how I think about it in my head, but maybe
the Ashaman, the bond that the Ashaman discovered, is really more of a just, hey, I'm here and I'm okay kind of bond, if I remember correctly. What I'm interested in is that double bond in between Chandlers, that Pavara and Andrel bond.
Yeah.
That allows them to basically feel their emotions so clearly that they practically know what they're thinking.
Right. So we have a couple more, like, I guess, short questions to tackle before we wrap up. And one of them would be, how do you think a warder would feel if they bonded the least powerful Aes Sedai in the tower?
I don't think they would. I don't think they would. It goes to their motivation. I don't think they would really care if they're not, you know, if access to power wasn't their motivation. Because whether or not you're protecting the mission of someone that doesn't have a ton of capability and one power, but their mission is critical. It's still critical that they are
that they have that kind of relationship with their warder. So
yeah, and aside from the you know, the petty infighting and that stuff in between Aes Sedai, there's really very little distinction outside the White Tower between Aes Sedai of different strengths. You know, when an Aes Sedai goes to a king or queen, they don't check to see how that Aes Sedai ranks at the tower. To them, an Aes Sedai is an Aes Sedai. The power levels only make a difference when the Aes Sedai are interacting with each other. So it's not going to play a major part in a warder's day-to-day life.
I bet you there is some smack talk. There's got to be a little bit of smack talk, kind of. I can't think there wouldn't be a little bit. It's too much of human nature.
So if there's a little bit of that on the Aes Sedai side, we don't actually see much evidence of a hierarchy type thing on the warder side. The closest we get is kind of a military style, commander or whatever in the White Tower training grounds. But if you look at like the least powerful Aes Sedai's warder and you look at the Ammerlin Seat's warder, there's no evidence of like a hierarchy there. Like they just kind of all seem to get along, right? Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I think the way I see it is they just see each other as comrades at arms. You know, right. they're all brothers and sisters, at arms, and they're all doing the same job. You know, fighting the bad guys, protecting good guys.
The last question I have is a bit of a salacious one. We talked about the benefits of becoming becoming a warder. You get you're stronger, you're faster, you're more, you live a little longer. Do you think the Green Aja's warders get a little something something for the bedroom? They get a little extra stamina, a little extra, you know?
Do you think there's a... Jordan must have answered this question at some point, like stamina and warder. There's no one's ever asked the question that we've ever captured before in the database of the words stamina and warder together.
All right, your homework is to reach out to Brandon Sanderson and get an official answer on this. But no, I honestly, the simple answer is I don't see why not. Like if they have increased strength and increased stamina in other areas, I don't see why it would specifically not apply to this. Especially if the Greens were the ones to develop the bond in the first place.
Do you think there's like a Viagra weave?
Viagra weave.
Probably,
right? You know?
I mean, it's a question of like blood vessel dilation, you know.
The yellows know what it is, I'm sure.
If Cad Swain said that she could like pull all the blood out of somebody's heart with a weave, right? Sure if you have that level of control over somebody's blood in their blood vessels.
Her warders are living the life, I'm telling you. All right, Matt's face is really, really red.
Everyone's listening can't see Matt's hand in front of the camera, just kind of squeezing. that's what's killing me. Matt's hands as he was explaining Cod Swan pulling the blood out of. Just like and Matt looked like he was kind of pumping a heart, if you will.
Oh man. All right. Why don't we leave it there? This is a great conversation. I really appreciate both of your time. So, Matt, Melchior's King, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
And Matt, it's always good.
It's always good, man. It's always fun to be here at the bar side with my friends talking with the time.
All right. That's it for now. Thanks for listening to Barside Chats. If you are a fan of the show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, or tell a friend about us. That's it for now. We'll see you next time at the Barside. Barside Chats is a Dusty Wheel production. jointly hosted by Brian, the Gleeman, and Matt, the Innkeeper. If you would like to support this podcast, please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, or you may email us at podcast@thedustywheel.com.